not a hero. He's a silent guardian, a watchful protector. The Dark Knight.
Intro right there. Welcome back.
Welcome back, guys.
Brian, you're doing the intro?
I am doing the intro. Well, I'll give it a go, like.
What?
The long anticipated episode.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think we're going to split it into one or two parts, do you think?
It's going to be the first one, yeah.
C. Nolan, the big dog, yeah. Oscar winner.
Mm-hmm. Recently crowned. This is the one that's been in the works for a while.
So yeah, we've had a few requests for it.
Yeah, we hope people are going to tune in and listen to this because we're going to get into it. We thought we'd start at the end there, I suppose. Well, I think
end
for
of the
me,
Dark Knight.
without saying too much, I think it's probably the best ending of ever film of any film ever, I would say.
Bold statement.
I would say so, yeah. I just love the little monologue. Commissioner Gordon's little monologue there.
The tune's pretty cold when it drops, though.
Yeah.
The drums.
And it's just like, it's at the end when he's kind of, he's becoming Gotham's enemy, like, it's a real...
Yeah, but it's still building.
It's building, yeah, it's kind of contradictory in a sense, because he's supposed to be all these things, that he's supposed to have killed Harvey Dent, and, you know, he's going to be chased by the police, but at the end of the day, he saved the day, so it's kind of a, it's an ironic one, but what an unbelievable finish to an unbelievable film.
Well said.
But I suppose we're going to start at the beginning, maybe.
Yeah, do you have a few, a few facts on
Mr.
Nolan himself?
Christopher Nolan, where do we start? He's 53. He's done 12 films, ranging from 1998 to 2023.
Only 12 films?
12 films, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, yeah.
It's crazy. It's a bit like Tarantino, so.
Yeah, it feels like more, doesn't it?
Yeah, and three of them are in the fucking... belong to Batman as well, like.
Yeah. So we think today that we're going to go through his earlier... the earlier part of his career.
Yeah, and then we'll just talk about The Dark Knight then.
Yeah,
trilogy.
I think we just need to give that its due course. I think we need to talk about it as much as we can. That, you know, one of the most impressive trilogies ever made. Completely reviving the Batman... story, the Batman, the whole thing around Batman, the whole,
yeah, because it had taken a big dip there,
yeah,
especially through the 90s.
I think with George Clooney's one, took a massive dip. Joel Schumacher and was the director, and it kind
of, well, all the kind of the majority of, like, the comic book adaptations has fallen short to date,
but yeah,
maybe aside from like. Spider-Man really started off well.
Yeah.
They were building towards that, and then they started with the DC universe then.
And that's what Batman did, yeah. Revived, I suppose, superhero films as a whole. It took it completely on its head, took the humor out of it, made a real life...
It wasn't childish anymore.
It made it a real life story with no goofy villains. It made it, you know, it subverted the genre, I suppose. And, you know, I think starting off with Batman Begins, that's what it was like. Set the stall out very early. This is a proper film.
Watched it for the first time again there a few weeks ago.
Phenomenal.
I haven't seen it in years and years.
Yeah, and it's so underrated, I think, as well.
It's very, very good.
Yeah. But we'll start off with... I think we'll talk through the films first. So, well, I'll read them out first. So, Following was 1998, his first film, with the help of Emma Thomas, his wife, who also has produced all of his films. Has had a hand in producing all of his films.
Very low budget on that film.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that was the first one. Got some critical acclaim.
Yeah, sure. All the cast for that film had full time jobs.
Yeah,
whilst they were filming it.
It was done on weekends as well, wasn't it? It was done like over weekends over a full year. So all of them were, I think, either studying or in full time jobs. Haven't seen them myself.
No.
But that was 98, and it's about a man who. He. Follows people for... Do you have the synopsis there? He he follows people to write stories about them, but then eventually he gets dragged into a criminal underworld.
Okay.
And it was all based off Christopher Nolan when his flat was broken into in London when he was studying there. So that was kind of the whole premise of it. That's how he started off with the whole idea of it.
He's a machine.
Yeah.
Workaholic.
Oh yeah, 100%. Fun fact about him, just to kick it all off. I know you got
right,
a few.
They better be saucy this week.
Apparently, Christopher Nolan doesn't have a direct email address or cell phone number.
So how'd you get to talk to him?
That's the question, I suppose.
Send a pigeon or something.
He is slightly enigmatic, do you think?
Yeah, he's...
I don't know.
He's
a whole
eccentric
lot
enough.
Yeah.
I think he's private, like.
He plays his cards very close to his chest. He's not like... you know Tarantino, you'd see him. He'd be ripping into interviewers, or he'd be...
Yeah, but he's a big, you know, he's a show... He's big showcase guy. Yeah. Like, he's really trying to...
He's an actor as well. Like,
yeah.
He has acted.
But, like...
I also saw... Tarantino, he compared himself to David Fincher recently, who did Seven and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, with those type of films. He said that you can't really put us in the same category because I write my films, and it made me think, you know, Christopher Nolan writes.
He does.
The majority of these films anyway.
But they're different stories.
Yeah. But it does, you kind of do have to separate.
But they are similar in a way, like he tried to use like the least amount of CGI possible for the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, but he does use CGI.
He does, yeah, but like back in the day especially.
Yeah.
It's very Tarantino-esque.
But he doesn't, he says like he used it to enhance images rather than build the image.
Yeah, that's a good point.
With CGI, so he will delve in.
Shout out
Oshin over there in Zagreb. Living it up.
Oh, big time, yeah.
I don't think he even listens to this, to be honest with you.
No, he doesn't. He's too busy over there.
Maybe he will one day.
What was his name again?
Oren.
Next movie.
Memento 2000. Oh, I love this
movie. Oh, great film, yeah. I've definitely seen it.
Would you like to talk about it there?
Yeah, it's starring...
I know you were telling me beforehand that this is one of your favourites.
Okay. Carrie Ann Moss, Georgia Fox, Joe
Who?
Pantoleo.
Who is Jordan
Joe
Fox?
Joe Pantoliano from The Sopranos. You would know.
Disclaimer.
I cannot believe this guy. Forget about Memento. This guy over here hasn't even seen Sopranos.
Byron, don't try and deflect.
You've got a podcast, man. You haven't seen Sopranos.
Don't deflect, right?
Please.
Okay, so Byron hasn't seen the next two films.
Shh.
Shh. Don't be embarrassed. Own it.
There's a magpie, man. Watch out.
Got a wave. We left the window open today.
We're warm with nature right now.
Wave the magpie.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, you have to wave the magpie.
I thought you'd like...
No, if there was... I think if there's one magpie...
One magpie is bad luck, isn't it? You're supposed to say a prayer or something.
You can pray there if you want. I'm going to talk about Christopher Nolan, man.
You're cool. Okay.
So Memento, you haven't seen it?
No.
You were supposed to watch it.
Was
you
there a problem?
You told me you were going to watch it.
No, I didn't.
Right. Let me spit about Memento. So you know the premise of it, do you?
No. Please tell me.
Memento, I think it's one of his... Like, to think that this is his second feature film, is incredible. So, fun fact about this, it was conceived... On a road trip from Chicago to LA with Christopher Nolan and his brother Jonathan. They thrashed out the idea of it. It came from Jonathan's, he had a psychology class, and so it was obviously about amnesia, mm-hmm. but this is basically short-term amnesia. So the whole premise of the film, Guy Pearce, who is the main character.
He's looking for a guy that killed his wife.
Exactly. But he can't remember beyond 10 minutes. So every 10 minutes, basically, his memory reboots. It might be 10 minutes, be like an hour or so.
Like, how much does a reset? Does he even know what he's doing? Like,
he can't remember. So he can remember... So he had an injury, and he can remember, like, his life before that. But every day since is... Basically, he can't remember anything. So he leaves marks all over his body.
Tattoos and stuff.
Tattoos, yeah. He leaves notes for himself, but you'll find that throughout the film he's trying to find his wife's killer. He eulogizes throughout. He kind of narrates the film as well as he's going along.
That sounds pretty cool.
It's one of those what's the phrase unreliable narrator, you know, like where the person who's narrating shouldn't be believed, shouldn't be that, you know, that's not necessarily the truth as such. So the truth is manipulated by these people around him. He starts getting notions in his head that,
what, they start like forging notes and stuff,
stuff like that, and hiding stuff. But it is absolutely phenomenal. It's so well paced. It's good performances all around. Yep. But it's not really about the performances. It's just this incredible premise that's done so well. And it's a short, tight little film. It's very... so they splice it with black and white scenes from kind of the past. But then it goes into the present with Guy Pearce, the main guy.
It's had mixed reviews.
No, it's brilliant, man. It's one of my favorite. I think we're going to rank it in the second episode. We're going to rank all these films in the second episode. But I'm going to say it now. I think Memento is well up there.
I'll have to give it a go.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we'll have a true verdict of it, like, you know. Next one.
It might be a bit complicated for you.
Do you think?
Maybe, yeah.
We'll see. On to the next film.
Did you see this one?
Insomnia. How fitting. I don't remember watching this one now.
Why is that fitting?
Don't start, man.
What does
We're not doing this today.
What does insomnia mean?
We're not doing this today.
What does insomnia mean?
You don't sleep.
Yeah. So why is that fitting?
Like, we were just talking about Memento, like, you know.
What are you talking about?
About amnesia, like. You backed me into a corner.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I feel bad.
I'm sure this is a film for a classic next.
Right. I'm not trying to be mean.
I'm sure it's brilliant. Please give me your synopsis of the movie, please. Thank you.
I don't think my synopses are as good as yours.
They're not.
Yeah. I'm saying that to you.
Yeah.
I'm being nice to you. Sound like that. Like. Okay, so you haven't seen this one either?
Yes, I stated that like a few minutes ago.
Why are you getting all nerky now?
I'm not.
Do you know the premise of it?
Nope, I haven't seen it.
Insomnia. I don't even want...
Anyway, starring Al Pacino, yeah. Robin Williams.
Yeah, Robin Williams.
Hilary Swank. Martin Donovan.
Insomnia is, so obviously as the name suggests, Al Pacino.
It's about like a police detective, like, and he's investigating the murder of like a teenage girl.
Yeah.
It's near like a small fishing town. Anyway...
I think what makes this film so enjoyable is watching Robin Williams as a bad guy. Because he pulls it off really well. Like, he's really creepy. Very convincing.
Robin Williams as the bad guy.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Al Pacino, I think he puts in a decent performance. Not his best. But basically, yeah, he's in Alaska, I think it is. And we're up the very top of Alaska. And the sun is kind of all year round. So there's very little... like at night time it's sunny, so he can't sleep. He's trying to catch this killer while he's kind of slowly going insane himself. I've read reviews. I don't think it's his best received film, but I really, really enjoyed it. It's kind of hard, a very hard film to find, actually. Looking on Sky Movies and YouTube Movies and that, I haven't been able to
find it. Watch 32, that's
yeah
the name of the game.
Yeah, for real. But it's kind of considered a bit of a deviation from what his usual formulas are for film. It's a bit more of a slow burn. And obviously, I don't think he does the kind of whodunit crime thriller as much, you know. It's kind of more sprawling action epics. But I enjoyed it anyway. And obviously, watching Al Pacino and Robin Williams thrash it out is pretty fun as well. So...
Yeah. Decent synopsis right there.
Okay, thank you. So it goes from Insomnia in 2002, then we have a 3-year break.
Ooh, okay.
Now, I just want to say before we get into the Dark Knight trilogy that in between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, The Prestige was made.
I didn't even know he did The Prestige.
What? Really? Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah, of course I've seen it.
So So he had Prestige in 2006. So Batman Begins was done in 2005. Then The Prestige in 2006. Then The Dark Knight in 2008. Then Inception in 2010. And then The Dark Knight Rises. So all there's starring, two films.
All starring Christian Bale.
All of them?
Yeah. The Prestige.
The Batman. Inception.
I wasn't listening. Sorry. What I was trying to say is, before you interrupt me, 2002, 2008, all four films were starring Christian Bale.
Christian Bale?
Yeah. 2008, Batman Begins, The Prestige, so on and so forth.
2002? What are you talking about?
It's written right there, man.
That's 2005.
No. Yeah, it is. Yet again.
You're really annoying.
You really need to fix your handwriting.
You're really annoying me today.
It's been a long day.
Okay. So, we'll get into The Prestige and Inception, because they're both... lots to talk about then, but that's going to be in our next episode. So that's where we're going to break it up. It's not going to be chronologically. But we need to talk about the Dark Knight trilogy. Set us off, Byron. Why is this? Why do we love this trilogy so much? What is it?
Very good. The music was very good.
I was setting you up there, like.
I know you were.
I was ready to make you... You were going to spit there.
Well, it's the long-anticipated return of Batman, like, it's... Mm-hmm. What everyone knew his potential before it. Like all the comic book fans, everyone. But like, it's just... It was a breath of fresh air. Mm. I liked Ra's al Ghul for Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Liam Neeson was cold. But they like... He did... It was just the way he built Batman up.
Mm.
Like, he told his origin story so well.
Yeah.
And he got the whole League of Shadows in. And he fit it all into one movie. It wasn't even that long either. It was just the pacing of it, and you could just tell what was coming up was going to be huge.
Yeah, that opening segment of Batman Begins, when obviously he's in
prison,
this far off part of the world. Yeah, he's in prison, and then Ra's al Ghul finds him. He makes a climb to the mountain, to the League of Shadows. It's an incredible origin story. I mean, it's really...
Yeah, it's the journey and the way they're cutting back to his past, when his parents get killed.
That's what I was about to say, the way he cuts back and the way that he splices it with...
It's seamless, like it's...
Seamless. And then we were watching it, and it's so seamless that, like, by the time it brings you around to, okay, now he's becoming Batman...
Yeah, you feel like you're still watching the first 5 minutes of the film.
It's so well done. So well done. The only thing I would pick from that film... I don't even know if it's... I don't know what the weakness is in that film. I don't know why. Because I actually think it's better. I could...
I think it was just the final battle scene, you know, with Ra's al Ghul.
I think it's... there's a case to be said for it being better than The Dark Knight Rises. I don't know if you agree with that. But we'll get into it
next.
We'll get into it on the next episode 2 of Christopher Nolan. But I think, in terms of ranking these... I love Batman Begins. And I don't know why people don't rate it as highly, you know?
Do they not really?
I don't know. Do they talk about it as much?
Well, I think the second two are just... They're much more blockbuster.
Yeah.
This one just flies under the radar because...
I think what it is with this one is... there's no kind of clearly defined villain either. Apart from... Like, we both know Ra's al Ghul is
an incredible villain. He's not really even the villain until like the last 20 minutes of the movie as well. Then it kind of feels a bit rushed.
But I both like it, but I also think it's kind of... If I'm looking at it from a perspective of hardcore fans, or else kind of dubious fans...
You just gotta be neutral.
Yeah, but they need a mainstay villain. Like someone who you can clearly see this is the villain for the whole film, hence...
Yeah, because he wasn't the villain until like the last 20 minutes, and then everything kind of happened really fast.
Mm. Yeah, but then you have Scarecrow as well, Cillian Murphy, and then it seems like, okay, he's going to be...
Is there two... Yeah, there's a bit of... But that's kind of like Batman in general, like, you can't sum each movie down to one villain, really, because he's got so many.
But then you have Falcone as well, like, it's almost like there's three or four villains in it. It starts off and it's the guy who kills his parents.
Bit overwhelming.
And then it's Falcone, and then it's Cillian Murphy, and then it's Ra's al Ghul coming back in at the end. Maybe if they had a bit more continuity with Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
Possibly, I don't know. But I think...
We're nitpicking, like...
We are very much nitpicking. I think... the other thing that kind of peeves me... The only... maybe it's the only thing that pleased me about the trilogy is Katie Holmes.
His love interest.
Yeah, Katie Holmes.
In the first one.
I think she's slightly weak, and I think Maggie Gyllenhaal is brilliant in the second one. I think that in The Dark Knight, she is, that's Jake Gyllenhaal's sister. And she is a really good actress. She really pulls it off.
Yeah.
I think Katie Holmes is a little bit weak. I'd like to have seen Maggie Gyllenhaal the whole way through.
Was she part of the League of Shadows or something, the first one? No.
Katie Holmes?
Yeah.
No. Rachel is, that's her name in the thing.
It wasn't that bad, like, I enjoyed it.
No, she was good. I'm just saying, I would have liked if they... I don't know why Maggie Gyllenhaal... I don't know why Katie Holmes wasn't able to do this. The Dark Knight. Could we look that up, maybe?
No.
Please look that up.
Katie Holmes.
Katie Holmes. Why did Katie Holmes not do The Dark Knight? Katie Holmes also married Tom Cruise. Little fact for you. But yeah, I think that possibly could have given it a bit more continuity. I'm not sure if Katie Holmes is the right choice either.
Katie Holmes was replaced by Maggie Gyllenhaal as Rachel Dawes in The Dark Knight, but her exit was due to personal preference, not creative differences. Holmes left to explore other roles.
Ugh. What a bad choice.
And appeared in movies, in the movie Mad Money instead. That's an L.
That's a massive L by her.
Oh well.
Got an upgrade, like, to be fair.
But when we're talking, like, the first time you see the bat suit, the Batmobile,
talk
it's
about iconic. That, because that's so exciting. Like.
But it's, I think a lot of it really is down to the soundtrack.
Mm. Oh yeah, 100%.
Like the way that they're able to build up, like, just make the scene really intense. Like, you're waiting for it to come and he flies out in the Batmobile.
I'm going to say this is maybe Hans Zimmer's one of his best scores.
Yeah.
I just think, especially for that clip we played at the start, the...
But it just identifies so much with Batman.
Yeah, it's so empowering. Like, it's inspiring music. You know?
That's what it is.
It's kind of dark as well. I love it. I love that scene in Batman Begins where he's climbed the mountain and he's about to go into the temple in the mountain, and it just builds. It's like he's rising up, like, you know. And he takes a fair few knocks throughout the films. You know. It's one of the things I like about The Dark Knight Rises the most is how they build him back up again. I love that.
Every time.
And I just, as a geek, I love Lucius Fox's role. I love him as kind of like quartermaster, like, he's getting him all this stuff. He's getting him the Batmobile. The Batmobile is so cool, man. Like, seriously.
Morgan Freeman was brilliant, though. He was they so snuck good. Him in there, but they it snuck was just him brilliant. In,
yeah. Yeah.
Just the way, like, he was just, he came back from the dead, took over his company again.
Yeah. And he's just chilling, man.
Such a tycoon.
And then I suppose we have to talk about Mr. Michael Caine.
His film Interstellar, in the sixth consecutive movie of his to have played a role by Michael Caine. So basically,
that's his guy.
The last six movies Nolan did since before Interstellar featured Michael Caine.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, I just, you know, pull that fact up on the fly.
You're cool.
You know?
I think he's the je ne sais quoi of the whole trilogy, Michael Caine.
Well, you just need an English butler.
Yeah. I meant to ask you, what's your favourite Batsuit?
I really like Robert Pattinson's one.
A lot of people have been saying that.
It's pretty cold. And I did like his cape, the way it came into like a proper wingsuit.
I found it a bit clunky, though.
Well, he was good. They were really trying to play on just the realism of it all. Like, even more than The Dark Knight.
Yeah, that's true. But you could see that suit, though, in The Dark Knight. It's not that unrealistic, like.
Yeah, but like the way he put on that the face, you know, like the eyeshadow he puts on.
That's cool. Yeah.
It was like you know, the way it was kind of like half rubbing off.
Mm.
It's pretty cool.
But I just think that suit is so clean in The Dark Knight. Like, you notice it progresses throughout the film. It gets a bit, like, cooler each time.
Yeah, sure, he's just modding it.
Yeah. And then, have you seen Ben Affleck's Batman?
Ben Affleck,
sorry. Jesus.
Yeah, I liked him when he had the big iron suit when he was fighting Superman. Mm. That was a really cool bat suit.
Mm.
And did you see the one where was he like looking into the future when the world had been taken over by Superman? And it was just like a big desert, and he was just wearing like a, it was almost like a Carhartt jacket with the fucking the bat suit on.
I haven't seen
over it. I haven't seen either, but it was like I've seen the clips of it. That was pretty cool.
I don't know if I
Desert those, Batman.
I wouldn't give those films a watch though.
No, I've never actually watched them fully.
This is the thing about it, is I think when you've got something like Batman, you have to treat it with a serious amount of respect. I think it's something that gets overused, I think. And I think like reading up on it, how much of a risk this was for the studios. And for
but they really made it into like a drama thriller type superhero movie. Well, he wouldn't even like, it almost just ascends over like just the classic superhero movies. The trilogy in itself.
It becomes like a drama. It becomes a crime.
Sure, how often, crime escapade. How often does the lead or supporting actor win a bloody well Oscar? Best supporting role.
Yeah.
In a superhero movie. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. And that's why...
And they did. They got real-time actors in there. Like heavy hitters.
It makes me want Christopher Nolan to do another superhero film. But I just don't know if there's anything...
Let sleeping dogs lie, you know?
Maybe, yeah. I don't think there's any other superhero story that maybe has that scale either that he could do. Because he needs big scale. So that's Batman Begins, 2005.
Yeah.
Critical acclaim.
Oh, I have a little fact before we move on.
Go on.
When Batman Begins was in the middle of production in Chicago, a drunk driver accidentally crashed into the Batmobile. Apparently the driver was highly intoxicated, and when he saw the Batmobile, he thought it was an invading alien craft and rammed into it in a state of panic.
That was good. I have some Christopher Nolan facts as well before we move on. This is a kind of a midway interval. So Christopher Nolan never attended film school, which is pretty cool. He studied literature.
In the University of London?
Yes.
Boom.
Just before we go on to the next, the big one, I suppose, the big one out of
this. I'm going to throw another fact in there.
You keep interrupting me today, man. You keep interrupting
Oh, please, continue with your facts.
No, go on. Rude ass.
As of July 30, 2023, 8 out of the 12 films directed by Christopher Nolan are in IMDb's top 250 films of all time. 8 out of 12.
That's pretty cool. What's not up there? Zoom Following.
Insomnia,
yeah.
Oh, it's there.
Really?
Yep.
I hope Dunkirk.
Well, Tenet made it.
What?
Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. I misread. The four missing films are... You're I was right. I was right. The Following, Insomnia, Dunkirk, and Tenet.
Oh, Dunkirk didn't make it?
No.
Yes.
Really... Did you know he flew in a Spitfire plane during the filming of the aerial battle scenes in Dunkirk in order to get a proper, realistic view of dogfights?
That's pretty cool. I just want to preface this by saying I do not like Dunkirk.
I enjoyed it.
I know you enjoyed it. A lot of people seem to enjoy it. A lot of people think it's one of his best films. Never saw it personally.
I'm just a sucker for a war film, and it was very well done.
It was well done, but there was no soul in it. Like, there was no soul in it at all.
Well, what do you want from it? Like, they're on the beaches of Dunkirk.
Go back to that then. Are we ready to crack into our... Oh, no, I have my facts. Sorry, before you interrupt. So he never attended film school.
Okay.
Before we go into The Dark Knight... Memento. Brad Pitt almost starred in Memento. And when you look at that film, Guy Pearce...
He looks like him.
He looks so much like him. It's crazy.
He looks like Fight Club Brad Pitt right there.
Yeah. And then, final little fact on Christopher Nolan. Blade Runner is his favourite movie by Ridley Scott.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
He also loves...
He's a sucker for Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious?
He loves it.
Ugh.
I think his favourite one was Tokyo Drift, which is solid.
I haven't seen any of them.
Tokyo Drift's running the world. It's a good one to start with.
That's an outtake, but yeah. Mr. Nolan. Oh, Byron. Oh.
I'm sorry, I was holding that out for so long.
That was disgusting.
I have a cold.
Why? So are we going to crack onto this? To That was a nice.
Yeah, move on to the Dark Knight.
I'll be a little clip before we. Oh! What's wrong?
I forgot the Batman Begins clip.
Oh, is it? Go on. We have time.
Do you want to set the scene? So basically, Ra's al Ghul is just giving Batman.
This is very cool.
He's giving Bruce Wayne a bit of a pep talk. You know, telling him how to forget about his father and move on.
The nature of resentment.
And revenge and what what it's worth.
You're stronger than your father.
He didn't know my father.
But I know the rage that drives you. That impossible anger strangling the grief until the memory of your loved one is just poison in your veins. And one day you catch yourself wishing the person you loved had never existed. So you'd be spared your pain.
Very cool. Sorry if you had to strain and listen to
it. Yeah, you probably have to turn off the volume there. You can turn it back down.
Yeah, that was a very cool scene. And I think Liam Neeson was kind of underrated in that role as well. Also about that film is you don't actually realise he's Ra's al Ghul until the end of it.
Yeah.
But he drops some real wisdom.
He's very intimidating in it.
Yeah.
I didn't realise he was that tall.
6'4", yeah.
Beast.
Not as tall as me, like.
You're an animal, man.
Thank you.
Liam Neeson would just, he would destroy you.
He'd
bend you up like a pretzel, man.
He's very intimidating in that, actually. He's very,
I think it's the goatee.
Yeah.
The goatee does wonders for him.
Actually, really does. You wouldn't think it either. I like how he's so prevalent in, one of my favorite things about the trilogy, one thing that saves, that kind of elevates Dark Knight Rises, how he's so prevalent in that film.
Yeah, he starts off, for the majority of the movies, he's basically
Tink Man.
Kung Fu Panda, what's your man's name?
Kung Fu Panda.
Master Shifu. You know Master Shifu's boss.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Dark Knight, right?
What's his name?
Dustin Hoffman. Oh, Master Oogway.
Master Oogway. He was Master Oogway for Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. But then he
Dustin Hoffman to go away.
But you know what I'm saying, though? He's really cool the way he comes back into The Dark Knight Rises. He's kind of this overarching kind of thought in it. Like, he's like a ghost almost throughout the film. Obviously, you're talking about the League of Shadows, but then he joins Bruce Wayne in the cell when he's in the cell in the prison.
Yeah, well, that was pretty cool.
And that mirrors, that is actually almost...
He's just trying to remember his training and...
Yeah, but it was incredibly similar to when he does it in Batman Begins, where he's in the cell in Batman Begins, and he approaches Bruce Wayne. So it's kind of very similar. Yeah, I like that. That's why I think he's almost a better villain than Bane, because he had a hand in creating Batman, like, you know? But then he also tried to destroy Batman City.
Spit, man.
Thank you. So anyways... We're going to talk about...
The Dark Knight.
One of my favourite films of all time. Where do we begin? What's your favourite? If you had to pick three things about this film that you love, that is unique to this film. I'm putting you on the spot here.
Heath Ledger's laugh.
Nice.
The car chases.
Uh-huh.
Those fucking...
Yeah.
When he's tearing it up the road.
Very cool.
And they're coming after him. And...
One more thing.
The hospital scene.
Brilliant.
And they blow that shit up.
The thing that I like the most about Dark Knight, the more I think about it, every time you watch that film, you can take a new perspective from it. You can take something... Some new kind of moral ambiguity from it. Some kind of...
it's a lesson.
Yeah. The trials and tribulations of morality from it. Ethical kind of conundrums and shit like that.
Yeah, because one watch you'd be kind of beside him with Batman, and then you're like, the next time you're watching it, you're just like, oh, come on, man.
Like the whole...
Give over.
The whole ethical thing around at the end when he uses the cell phones as sonar is absolutely brilliant. I didn't consider how... So it's an invasion of privacy it's such a dangerous concept, like, but he needs to get his hands dirty to actually defeat the Joker, because the Joker has dragged everyone into it, like, and that's the genius of the Joker, you know. I think they just did such a phenomenal job with this film.
Do you think he's right by his whole philosophy, like, he's not killing anyone, he's just...
Well, that's just one of those things, like, That's just a personal thing. That's just like, okay.
Yeah, but you can really do it, you know, doing a few lads in sometimes.
Yeah, it should. And like, you're almost thinking to yourself, it'd be a lot better in the grand scheme of things if you just did it. But his brain is kind of hardwired to think, okay, my parents were killed this way, I'm never going to do it. And that's the other, that's another moral.
Yeah, and he wouldn't, you know, like, I suppose he did respect the Joker in a way, like, he did have, you know, when he didn't drop him at the end of the film.
That was the one thing where he could have, definitely.
And Joker had respect for him because that was his adversary. Like, he never wanted to kill him.
Yeah. And then one of the coolest lines that I've ever heard is, either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Within that, there's so many different connotations, so many permutations, I think.
That line was taken over the world a few months ago, like a year ago, on TikTok.
Really?
Yeah. It's overdone now. There's too many edits on it.
Well, it was just so brilliant at the time. It was so thought-provoking, like. And it's so
true. It went over my head the first time I saw that line.
Like, you have to watch that film, I'm telling you. Five or six times. What?
Can we just talk about when... the second film, whenever Batman is just there, he just pops
up. we're talking about how great this film is, and you gotta talk about this goofy. Okay,
every time it cuts to Batman, he's just standing there, and he just shouldn't.
For all you listeners,
why are you looking at the camera like?
For all you listeners, I would say proceed with caution, but. So every time, like, there's a.
You know the way it is, like, he's...
There's, like, a cut. It
he's
cuts.
So mysterious. Like, you know the way, like, whenever Commissioner Gordon turns around, he's gone.
It never shows him walking to a scene. It's always, like, he's just there. But it does... If you actually think about it, it's very, very goofy. When it just cuts to, like, the rooftop scenes, and he's just standing
there. The mask and the way he's pouting.
No, the best one is in the... Is it in the first one or the second one?
Yeah, it's got to be the second one.
It's the second one where he's just posted up. Squatted. he's squatting on the staircase, the building staircase.
That might be the first one. He's squatting over Commissioner Gordon's shoulder.
Yeah, that's it.
He turns around just there.
But we were watching it last year in our old apartment, and you pointed that out to me, and it made me so mad.
You were raging because you just wanted to enjoy the film.
I really get into it.
There's a few of us there, like, and we just... There was no stopping at once. But they noticed it.
And then it happened so many times as well.
Yeah, but be careful, because once you see it, you can't unsee it.
And you really have to, like, tune out a bit, like, just disregard.
It's always going to be the back of your head now, though, so you're welcome.
But anyways, back to the good stuff, because it's all the good stuff. Go on.
There's a fact coming. I'm just loading it up there.
Let's go.
I'll hit him with like a little light one here. The mayor of a city called Batman sued the production.
What?
The mayor of a city called Batman sued the production. Weird lawsuits surrounding Mayor Motion Pictures are nothing new, but The Dark Knight has inspired a particularly strange one. In late 2008, after the film had opened to critical acclaim and enormous box office success, Kalkin, the then mayor of Batman, Turkey, sued Nolan and Warner Bros. For what he deemed to be a negative impact the film could cause on the city. That's
the silliest fact ever.
I'm out here with those obscure facts, man. You couldn't even find in your wildest dreams.
Good. Don't want to hear those. What else did you like about The Dark Knight? We were talking about Harvey Dent's character before.
You were.
Yeah, because he's a really important character throughout. He's the kind of the eruption of all these moral questions, and like, so basically it's Batman takes an L in that film, effectively. Okay, he defeats the Joker, but Harvey Dent was their opportunity to
build a poster boy, like,
to be a poster boy, but actually build on the legality of getting rid of crime Gotham, because Batman, you know, he can never do that. Batman can get caught, you know. Batman can be found out, but Harvey Dent was doing it legally. He was fighting a good fight, and he was their chance at a crime free Gotham City. But effectively, when he was turned with all that anger by Joker, and when he died at the end, that whole hope was gone, you know?
Yeah, and he also took a massive L when he lost his bird.
Yeah, massive. That was such a brilliant scene.
It was just like the way that the Joker was mysterious, but he was just so evil. You know, it was like, there's some really striking scenes. You know, when he kills one of the fake Batmans and he hangs him.
Yeah, yeah.
At the side of a building.
That
was goose you. It does goose you.
Mm.
And like, he was ruthless when he planned the bank robbery scene at the start. What a way to open the film.
That's brilliant.
And he killed each man in order.
But then, like, what I love about the way he was written is, like, he doesn't care whether he lives or dies. Like, he could have been killed by those guys at the bank robbery. If your man hadn't asked him...
He's just there for anarchy, man. That's all he wants.
And then with Harvey Dent, he plays that game, like, the flip of the coin.
Yeah.
He don't care, like.
I'm sure he's been doing this for 50 years in the comics, like.
But I love how... I think it's really cool at the end of Batman Begins as well, when he's like...
The calling card.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's cool. Because everyone knows that's coming, but like, the Joker is huge.
Mm.
And there was a lot of worry that Heath Ledger was going to be able to like live up to Jack Nicholson's name.
Yeah. We've had some brilliant Jokers, to be fair. This guy is the GOAT, I think.
Even your man from Shameless, the ginger lad.
Mm.
He was very good.
Oh, come on.
He was good.
I haven't seen it, but like...
Have you ever seen Gotham?
No.
No. Well, I watched the first, like, 3 seasons of it.
Jesus.
Well, I'll say the first 5 seasons. It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like if you watch Suits.
Mm.
Like, you just get so repetitive after the first season.
Yeah.
I couldn't even watch the second season of Suits.
Yeah.
Suits or, like, The Walking Dead, you know. Mm. Like, that kind of stuff.
But do you think that Heath Ledger was the best Joker?
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix, fairly close behind.
Different kind.
Yeah. You had a lot more time to play with it, though.
Well, do you think it's tougher, like, to... Because Heath Ledger really focused. He focused in around... He didn't have nearly as much screen time as Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes, you're saying that could be a hindrance, so... If you have more screen time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because you really have to perform then for well over an hour on screen, besides from, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah, odd, that's minutes. True. I also think that Dark Knight is just a better film, so...
Yeah.
But apparently...
It's got it all.
Apparently for that role, Heath Ledger, he locked himself away in a room, like, for a long time. And it was pure method, like.
Yes.
You have a fact.
Fact. Yes, Ledger really did keep a Joker diary.
Really? That's creepy.
Because of the actor's untimely death in January 2008, at the age of just 28, Ledger's performance as the Joker has been somewhat... Skip. I need to start fucking cutting these facts. In fact, Ledger really did make a diary while preparing to play the character. It included various clipped art from The Clockwork Orange.
Wow.
Stylized notes and even lines from the scripts recopied in his own handwriting. In 2013, Ledger's father, Kim, revealed that the diary in a documentary and noted that his son did immerse work like this before. But he just really took it up a notch.
Wow. Yeah, because I was telling you about that documentary I watched before on Heath Ledger.
Yeah. It did feature in that.
But they were talking about, one of his friends was saying, so he locked himself away in a room basically for long patches of the day. But then, like, his friend was saying in the documentary that Heath Ledger rang him up and he was like, okay, I think I've got it, like, I've got the voice. And he said the voice, like, and he had it off. He did, like, the laugh and everything. Your man was blown away, like,
that's really
imagine
cool.
Imagine that, like, hearing that firsthand, like, the Joker, you know what I mean?
Spine tingling stuff right there.
For real.
You know when he did the... Yeah, just... So, the prosthetic supervisor, Conor O'Sullivan, was driven to take inspiration for the scars from a real life.
Mm.
So he used an actual man on the streets as a reference. Quote, I immediately thought of the punk and skinhead era and some unsavory characters I'd come across during this time. O'Sullivan recalled. This, quote, the terminology for this type of wound is a Glasgow or Chelsea smile.
Oh, yeah.
A delivery of fruit machines was made to the estate near my workshop, and the man delivering them had a Chelsea smile. I plucked up the courage to ask him for a photo, and he told me that the story of how he got it, of his scars while being involved with a dogfight. Needless to say, I didn't pursue the matter. So that's basically like when they get, like, a credit card, and they shove it in your mouth, and just... just punch you in the mouth, like they press it out.
Yeah.
Or they just cut you up.
Sick, like.
They were about to do, do you remember in Green Street, they're about to give Frodo a bloody well.
Really?
Glasgow Smile, do you remember?
Yeah.
When they caught him after the football game, but then the boys pulled up.
Oh yeah.
The West Ham boys.
Ugh. Such a rank thought though, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're very hard to stitch. Ugh. Apparently. It's never gonna heal properly.
Move on, man. Jesus, that's sick.
Grow up.
Anything else about The Dark Knight before we move on?
When the Joker and his goons...
No, not facts, just thoughts, like. Jesus.
I have put a lot of work into these facts. I'm gonna fucking say them.
Go on.
No, I'll save this for another time.
There's not gonna be another time, you have to say it now.
Well, they really got rid of this. They got rid of Scarecrow awful quickly in that start of that one, didn't they?
Yeah, but he's not in it, really.
I know, it's Cillian Murphy and it's... They built him up in the last movie.
He wasn't Cillian Murphy.
They just tossed him to the side.
Yeah, but he wasn't A-lister back then.
Fair. But the character itself.
Yeah, I suppose. I kind of like
that. Was Falcone even in the second one?
No, he was in Arkham. He was mental at that stage. But they had Maroni, who's the other kind of... But it's probably like crime side. It's probably a crime thriller as well. Like, they really go into that whole aspect of things.
I love Gordon's character.
Oh, we haven't even spoken about him really yet. He's so good.
He's very noble and brave.
He's very noble and brave and that. Obviously, Gary Oldman's top notch. But then I suppose, I'm moving on to Dark Knight Rises. He really kind of sullies his hands at the end of Dark Knight with the whole dent thing. Like, he... what does he do? He... Remember at the start of Dark Knight Rises when he has the speech written out?
Well, he just goes off the cuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, but he says... Like, there's 8 years since The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. And the whole Dent Act was... The whole premise of it was that they could send criminals to jail without parole or whatever. So that was all built on a lie because Dent obviously killed those people. So, so Commissioner Gordon... Was he commissioner at the end of... He was, yeah. At the end of...
Yeah, there was a big... was there a shootout? There was an attempted assassination. Was that Dark Knight or Dark Knight Rises? During the parade?
Yeah, that was Dark Knight, yeah.
Okay.
So anyways, in Dark Knight Rises, the whole Dent Act is based on a lie. And Commissioner Gordon is about to read...
Sure, didn't they agree to that at the end of The Dark Knight?
Yeah,
they made a plan about something.
But nobody else knew about it. Like,
yeah.
So... But then Bane finds his notes for the speech and he says it at the end, midway through The Dark Knight Rises. So anyways, getting on to Dark Knight Rises. I think for me, the best segment in that film is the kind of in the middle where Bane tears Gotham apart and Bruce Wayne is in the prison. I think it's just brilliant the way that he's watching that.
Oh yeah, that's killer.
And those scenes are done really well, like the pacing, the whole, it's really tight and compact.
I love that intro, of Bane when he was walking into the football stadium onto the field and they were singing the national anthem.
Really good, Joe.
Oh,
it was brilliant. I'm gonna say it though, I don't know if Tom Hardy's as good as everyone is saying. Like,
oh, he is.
I don't rate him.
Like,
I don't rate him. That's my big take.
They could have went for the classic, you know, Bane 8-foot-tall, goofy, just a big brute.
Yeah, but he's a big brute, man. That's what he is.
No, but like, this guy, this Bane got his own kind of sense of morals. Like, he's got a goal.
He's got an intelligence to him. I don't know if he does.
He does. He's got a goal. He knows what he's trying to do.
One thing I will say, he's more ruthless than fucking Joker. Maybe not Joker, but...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Joker's just there for a bit of anarchy.
He's so ruthless. He doesn't have really... He kills everyone, Bane. Like, he doesn't give a shit. What do you think about the twist at the end? Miranda Tate being the reincarnation of Ra's al Ghul of the League of Shadows. Do you like that twist? What do you think of it?
I thought it was a bit, ugh.
Yeah, I kind of agree, to be honest. I'm not sure if I hate.
Did we need to know? No. I don't know. Did we need to add that in?
I don't know. I think it was a good twist. I just don't know if...
It just didn't hit.
Was she the right person for that either? Marion Cotillard is the actress. But I think she was good. I think she was pretty good.
I think maybe if she was American.
I get a sense from The Dark Knight Rises. I don't know if there was... as much energy in it. It was almost as if... No, it has a brilliant ending.
I think it's very similar to the third movie in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, tying up a lot of loose ends and stuff.
They're just tying them up, waiting for the big fight scene at the end.
I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it, though. I think he was good. He was very virtuous, like. And he kind of brings it back to the whole orphan beginnings and brings it back to the root of why.
But do you think they should have made like a sequel on that?
Jeez, you love interrupting me today, don't you? Asshole.
Speak faster, man. Man, we're coming up on an hour here.
Yeah, I know. We better finish up. Anything else you want to say about Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah. When the Joker and his goons crash Bruce Wayne's fundraising party.
Dark Knight, man. What are you talking
almost
about?
Almost everyone in the room is intimidated into silence. One man, though, is not. He tells the Joker, "We're not intimidated by thugs." And then the Joker grabs him and holds a knife to his mouth. That man is Patrick Leahy, the recently retired US Senator from Vermont, a lifelong comic book fan. Leahy has appeared in 5 Batman films to date, including 2016's Batman vs. Superman, where he sat alongside actress Holly Hunter in the congressional hearing. 5 Batman films.
That's pretty cool.
As a senator.
Good fact. Anything else about Dark Knight Rises?
No, I hope we wrapped it up.
I want to say that Dark Knight Rises, the ending is phenomenal. Like, I really, really like that. I love when Alfred is looking across the tables in Florence and he sees him.
But you know, Joker was supposed to appear in The Dark Knight Rises.
Really?
If it wasn't for Heath Ledger's death.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't know that. Mm-hmm. What do you think of Anne Hathaway in it? No, we have a
brilliant
an episode. Yeah, she's very good.
Like, she could have been the love interest there. She kind of was, though.
She was,
in the end.
Yeah. She was really good in that, though. She really brings a good kind of, I don't know, I think it needed that kind of female
character. Yeah. It did need that.
Obviously, I think, in fairness, I think Rachel Dawes was good in Dark Knight.
Yeah, but
you need that kind of superhero, like, you know?
Yeah, Catwoman, she's fairly iconic, like. Yeah. She did it justice.
Pretty cool, though, I have to say. But yeah, Dark Knight Rises is really good. I feel like I'm kind of putting it down a bit, but it's a really good watch. It's really entertaining. Like, and the whole, just before we finish on that, the prison scene is brilliant. That's what makes this film. It's the
rise.
Real kind of the rise. Yeah. And I think that's the kind of the word from this film is he starts off, his body is broken.
Yeah.
He then has to regain his soul, and I suppose why he wants to keep, and Alfred is telling him to stop the whole time. And he leaves because of that, but he finds that fire again, you know, and he saves Gotham again in the end.
But I love the way that they whoever thought of like Ra's al Ghul's prison, like it's
that was a brilliant
so
idea.
Torturous, like thinking about like freedom is right there. You just gotta take the leap, the leap of faith, man.
Anyways, that's Dark Knight. Brilliant trilogy, one of the best ever made. Well balanced. I suppose that concludes that segment of our show, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Move on to our movie of the week. Briefly.
American Fiction. The first half an hour.
My lack of enthusiasm there was not for not for the film.
Please, let me. The first half an hour of that film was pretty good. I wasn't expecting it to be a dark comedy.
Byron, just be honest, man.
I'm talking about the first 30 minutes of the film. I'll let you talk about the last hour and a bit. It's essentially a movie about he's a university professor. He's also an author. From what I gathered from the first 30 minutes, he's a bit unhinged. He needed to take a break from his academic activities, so he came back to meet his family back in New York, I think. And then shit was just going down, so I'll just leave that to you, Colin.
I think it was Boston, anyways.
New York.
Unfortunately, listeners, Byron fell asleep after half an hour of this film. That's why he only watched the first 30 minutes. American Fiction was up for an Oscar this year. Jeffrey Wright got his first Oscar nomination. And after this film, I was really impressed, to be honest with you. Cord Jefferson is the director. Sterling K. Brown is Jeffrey Wright's brother in the film. He was also up for an Oscar. Powerful performances across the board in this one. And a really, a fresh kind of authentic script.
It's kind of a wishy script, all right.
It was very funny in times, but really thought-provoking as well. So the premise of it is,
Is it lost or what?
It's kind of struggling with identity and stuff like that. So basically, Jeffrey Wright is this university professor, author. He's written really intellectual books, and he's looking to get his next one published, but he's in a real kind of a rut. He's really angry at the world around him, at how black lives are being presented.
Like all these industry plants of authors.
Yeah.
Going around.
So how black lives are being presented and how black experiences are becoming commodified and becoming... So stories being told about black...
Commercialized,
exactly. So the turning point is when he sees this Sintara, who's this fictional writer, and she writes a book about a black experience called Wheeze in the Ghetto or something like that.
Oh.
And then so as a joke, Jeffrey Wright's character, who's called Monk, he writes his own kind of black experience book, but it's kind of more of a piss take than anything, and it's called My Pathology, yeah. So it's about this kind of gangbanger, the story of a gangbanger, basically. But anyways, long story short, it receives critical acclaim, and he meant it as a joke, and he gets very resentful of the fact that it's become so successful. But then behind all that is the family story, which is done absolutely brilliantly, like, with, obviously, as I mentioned, Sterling K. Brown as the gay brother. The sister dies at the start, and they're also coming to terms with the mother, who has Alzheimer's. So it was fresh, it was funny, and it was
thought-provoking, though. Very playing on different aspects of all that sort of stuff.
I loved it, and I think
I liked the scene, you know, when he was on the phone there and he just left, like, it was a book reading and no one went to his book reading.
Mm.
And that's when he met the other author that he was just kind of against, the industry plant, I'll call it.
Yeah.
And he leaves the building or whatever, and he's just trying to get a taxi there, and then
the
white guy was ahead of him, and the taxi just goes straight to the white guy.
You know, it throws up a lot of questions.
Like, he's like, I suppose he's thinking, he's like, we should be playing on these kind of matters, not trying to fucking peddle to the masses with all these books and stuff.
It was brilliant, no, I have to say. And I'm going to score it quite highly. Would you like to rate your first 30 minutes, Byron?
First 30 minutes, 8.1.
Jesus Christ. No.
Actually, 8.
Oh, my God. American Fiction.
7.9.
I'm actually not going to count your
rating. 8, okay. We'll
I'm not going to count your rating this week. You don't get a movie of the week review this week. 9.0.
So what's up there with Dune with you?
Potentially could be better than June.
Alright, you're talking gack now.
Absolutely brilliant.
That's gack right there.
So yeah, that concludes our Christopher Nolan episode, guys. We hope that you enjoyed it.
We're up on an hour now.
We've had fun making it. We've had fun researching it, watching all the films. We're going to come back next week with the second half. We're going to talk about... Let me just run through some of these. We're going to talk about The Prestige, Inception, Interstellar, Dunkirk, Tenet, and Oppenheimer.
Quickly, we have another minute. Movie next week. Will we come back to you guys on that?
Do you have one on out of the top of your head?
No.
Okay, we'll come back to you guys.
Check the Instagram out, please.
Check our Instagram, guys. Keep liking, keep whatever reposting, commenting. We love you guys. Keep coming back, keep listening. Next week is going to be another banger. So.
Maybe Oisín Davenport will come back to us someday. Who knows?
Okay, so for now, I've been Colin Muldoon.
Myself, Byron Kenny.
Big Kahuna Podcast, over and out.